This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. We're going to talk some basketball today, talk about the University of Michigan with our good friend Mark Snyder of the Detroit Free Press. So let's bring in Mark. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Great. How you doing, Earl?
Hey, doing good. It's always good to talk with you. And it looks like the Michigan Wolverines, they're doing quite well this summer. I know a lot of people are projecting them to finish very high this season. Do you look at them? Is there good cause for all this optimism coming out of Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at, you know, they have two elite players, and even though Tim Hardaway didn't have the best year last year, Trey Burke is considered one of the top couple point guards in the country. And Hardaway has that potential, which he showed his freshman year and a couple times last year. And when you have two stars like that, you know, it's how you build around them. And with the freshman class that Michigan has coming in, they can take that big leap. They tied for the Big Ten Championship last year, but they had a disappointing NCAA tournament start. So now it's whether they can take that leap into being a good postseason team as well.
You know, Mark, oftentimes we see, I mean, even though these freshmen are, you know, everything is based on what they did in high school. They were great high school freshmen, but oftentimes, a lot of times that doesn't, transfer to that, especially the first year in college. It's such a difficult transfer. I don't know how good these guys think they are right now, or they think they can make that transition. But see some of these problems cropping up that as freshmen, you know, we've seen it over the years. That freshmen might, people might think there'll be 15, average 15 points. They might end up averaging 8 points or not just get that much playing time.
Well, I think Michigan needs these guys too. I think they're in a situation where they just lost Zach Novak, who for 4 years did everything for them, played heavy minutes. The same with Stu Douglas, who played heavy minutes, was a backup guard, started quite a bit as well, and shot from outside. So I think they lost two major components. So they need these guys to contribute in some way. And Mitch McGarry, one of the freshmen, is a big man, and Michigan hasn't had a true big man in a long time.
Okay. Got a caller for you on the line. We got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Earl. Good afternoon, Mark. I certainly can appreciate your writing your article. I think you're a very good writer. I think you're trying to do some positive. But I'm going to acknowledge my Michigan State-ism. And I'd like to play a little devil's advocate. You got to give John Beilein a lot of credit for what he's done to that program. I'm told that recruiting has improved, and I guess that's reason for optimism. But let's be honest, in the 5 years or so that John Beilein's been in the state of Michigan, I don't think he's beat Tom Izzo for an in-state recruit. Matt Costello, Denzel Washington, Draymond Green. Now, I understand with more wins, you get better recruits. But for all the positives that John has done, and there are many, when he's gone head-to-head with Tom, he hasn't come out on the winning end. I think that's a reality. And, I can understand optimism for next year with a lot of players coming back and talented. But let's be honest, this is a team in the last two games of its season was handled rather easily by a very good Ohio State team in the tournament, in the Big Ten tournament, and then lost the game in the NCAA tournament that, let's be honest, quite frankly, they had no business losing to. Ohio was a good team for the MAC. But if the Big Ten was as good as we were all led to believe, basically the best conference in the country, for the three-way champion to lose in the first round of the tournament to a MAC team, that's got to take away a lot of the momentum, doesn't it, Mark?
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that, you're going to look at two games. Well, someone else could say, look at the other side, the Big Ten championship. I think that that's with Michigan State. So I think that, that's computed the same way by everyone, and that was over a longer sample size. I mean, they played two bad games. They admitted those were two terrible games. But I think that they're going to learn from that, and they probably will have more talent this year than they've had at any time in the Beilein era. So in that sense, they're on the rise. In terms of them going head-to-head with recruits against Michigan State, I don't think that, as much as we love recruiting and we think that these and it interests us. I think that, you know, Izzo or Beilein or any coach anywhere would tell you, you know, it's the results on the court, not who you get in recruiting. And if you can produce on the court with whatever players you have, that's your, that's the way you operate.
That's true. I mean, we've seen so much of that. You know, recruiting, yes, it's important, but, you know, it just because very rarely, though, I must admit, I haven't seen Michigan and Michigan State going after the same players for the most part over the Beilein era. You know, most of the time they're going after a totally different guards or forwards, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I know that, as he said, you pointed out, Tom Izzo has gotten most of the guys who are in-state, the highly rated State of Michigan guys, but that doesn't mean that Beilein's not getting players he wants. I mean, he got Mitch McGarry, who at the time of his commitment was the number two center in the country, or number two power forward in the country. Glenn Robinson now has risen. He committed 2 years ago, but he's from Indiana, just like McGarry. He's the number 11 player in the country, you know, and he and Kay Harris is going to Michigan State with two of the top players in Indiana. So I think that, you know, you get who you can from wherever you can. Maybe maybe Beilein has put an emphasis on some of those surrounding states, knowing that Izzo has longer roots in Michigan. I don't know that for a fact. I'm not well-versed in recruiting, but, you know, I think it's about fit and it's about who you want for your program. And I think that Beilein has emphasized over the years at all of his coaching stops that he's going to get the guys that fit his program the best, regardless of where they're from.
Yes, and that's the one thing I've noted too, Mark. Yeah, Beilein goes after players that he feels can fit in this program. He doesn't really go after the five-star recruits or four-star recruits unless he believes this is a guy who can truly fit in the way he likes to play his basketball. And we've seen that with so many guys leaving and such like that. A lot of that is based on the guy just didn't fit his system. And he's one of these coaches who really wants players who definitely fit his system.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the other point that gentleman made, you know, about Michigan State and Michigan and going head-to-head, well, if you want to look at on the court head-to-head, Michigan's won three of the last four. You can say it's a small sample size, but it's the most recent sample.
Yes, that's true, and that's the only thing we can go by, you know, what have you done for me lately? That's sure. Always the theme in basketball. Hey, when you look at this team, how do you think – I know it's hard to tell now, but how do you think all these guys are going to mesh together? All the new players are going to mesh with the older players that have been there. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a problem.
Certainly it can, but I think that this group, from everything we've heard from the guys that I've talked to, the guys that Beilein mentioned and that Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway were talking about yesterday, is that these guys have gotten along. The freshmen have come in, they've been very humble. They understand that they're the new guys and they need to fit in with the group. Maybe that'll change once it becomes playing time and once the whole group is with coaches in the fall and everything. But for now, it seems like they're willing to accept that this is part of the way this culture is, and you work your way into the system. And I think Michigan State's been really good with that and showing an example of how the younger players, if they're talented, they'll play. But at the same time, they have to understand that the older players are the ones who lead the way and they have to follow step.
Yes, oftentimes we've seen in that, Mark, that, you know, the older players, even though people don't give them a lot of credit, even though they fall in love with the exciting freshmen coming in, the older players just don't make as many mistakes. And I don't know if people would ever give that enough credence that the older players will play well, and they just won't make the mistakes that the young players make.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of what's coming in here as we move forward closer to the season. This group and with Beilein's system, that's invaluable because there's so much learning to do and doing things the way he wants them done, as opposed to in some programs, you know, where it's a little looser and kind of you can create on your own.
Now, I know Michigan's have been favored, or they're being projected into the big top 10 in the country this year. Is that too high of a ranking, or should they be ranked in the top or considered a preseason top 10 team?
Well, they tied for the Big Ten title, and they return, you know, their two best players. I think that there's a lot, and they have a lot of talent coming in. I think it's hard to do those preseason projections. Maybe they're a little easier in basketball than in football, but, you know, who can tell? I mean, I think that, you know, those things are based on talent, and usually the most talented teams are the ones who are in the Final Four. And so if you got a lot of talent, then you deserve to be ranked that high.
Yes, and how do you think, when you look at Michigan and Michigan State next year, how would you project both those teams?
I think they'll both be contending for the league title, as they were last year, along with Ohio State. You know, I think that those are the teams who have the most talent, and I think Michigan State, obviously, the intangibles and all the things on the court and off the court lost with Draymond Green, you know, it's really hard to tell how that void is going to be filled. And I think that's the biggest challenge. And I think on both these teams, I guess maybe that's the biggest challenge of both these teams. Where is the leadership going to come from? They both had these seniors who, for so many years, were such an integral part of those teams. And what's the value of leadership? So I guess we're going to see a lot of that. I mean, both teams have incredible talent, but, you know, what's the leadership worth?
Yes, the leadership is, over the years, especially, I've looked at a lot of these last years. Leadership is just so important. I think maybe sometimes, Mark, maybe I have more so than others, but seem to devalue that leadership. And yet that's such a key part, is the leadership part of the game. I mean, I don't think people realize how important that is and how every team needs a valued leader. And yet, as I've talked with Tom, he said it's awful hard for kids to ask other guys to be leaders. It's a special person it takes to be a leader, isn't it?
Yeah, and it may not be the senior. And that's something that Michigan is definitely going to find out, because its senior class really doesn't have anyone who's played a significant role on the team before. Matt Vogrich and Josh Barlstein and Corey Person are guys who have, you know, been around and been on the team, but they haven't been the leaders on the team. And I think that that's something, especially on the court. So, you know, we'll see if they're the ones, or if it's younger guys like Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway and Jordan Morgan who take those leadership roles.
I know most time they try to get leadership roles from the point guards, right? Because that's the natural on the court leader, and maybe that'll come from Trey Burke and such. Do you look at that maybe? Do you think he has that kind of natural leadership skills?
I think Trey has them.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that something learned as a freshman on a team with two dominant leaders like Douglas, especially Novak. You know, he didn't really know what. No, he's a naturally vocal person that way, but I think that he can grow into that. And I think he learned a lot of that this summer when he's been at these camps, especially the Chris Paul camp and the Darren Williams camp, that he can be that forceful person. He just needs to assert himself. I think it's something very similar to what's going on the football side. You know, it's taken 3 years, but Denard Robinson is becoming that guy on the football side. It's not his nature to speak up, but he understands that that goes with the territory of being the best player.
Yes. Hey, Mark, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know you got a busy day, so I want to thank you for taking out your time to be with me. It's always good talking with you, and I know we'll be talking a lot during the season.
Anytime, Earl. For
okay.
You, anytime.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mark. Hey, we'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. You know, spread the word around. Give everyone a call. Let them know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR. We want you to stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
How does cancer evade drug treatment? I'm Neil Conan. Join Ira Flatto on Science Friday for a look at new research that suggests a tumor's neighborhood may be to blame, plus a silky solution to the problem of storing heat-sensitive drugs and the nuts and bolts of high-speed rail. That's Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl. The weather forecast: mostly sunny and breezy with a high of 90 degrees today. Overnight, a low of 65 and partly cloudy. For the weekend, partly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms both days. The high will be in the upper 80s tomorrow and low 90s Sunday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And the Moneyball Basketball League is going on now, so you can get over to Pattingale Middle School and check out some of the fine basketball from Michigan State players and other players at the Moneyball League going on at Pattingale Middle School on a Saturday and Sunday. Once again, just give us a call to talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Well, let's talk a little bit of auto racing from our good friend Terry Fitzwater. Hey, Terry, how you doing, buddy? Hey, Terry. Yeah, we can't hear. Is Terry, you there?
I can hear you, Earl.
Oh, okay, yeah, I can hear you now. Hey, yeah. Thanks a lot for being with me, Terry. Hey, as I was telling you on the phone, buddy, you know, I was really surprised when there were so few people at that ARCA race that was in it, man. I asked it. Then I looked at a couple other races. It just doesn't seem that ARCA, you know, doesn't draw that strong. How can they survive getting these? They must be getting a lot of TV money or something, because when you have so little turnout, it's gotta be hard to maintain that appeal, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, Earl. Well, one thing, ARCA, you know, they're having an anniversary here. They've been around 70, 75 years this year. They're founded by John Markham, who's from the Southern Michigan, Toledo, Ohio area. He actually founded NASCAR with Bill France Sr., and then the ARCA series kind of evolved into the northern swing of NASCAR when it was first founded, and then into a separate series altogether as NASCAR expanded. But, you know, it doesn't have the draw that NASCAR does, and it doesn't pretend to, because it's not a nationwide series. It does run through a lot of the country, but you'll see it run, you know, it'll run Talladega, it'll run Daytona, and pretty much most of the points east of the Mississippi. So, one, it doesn't have the national draw, so that hurts it. But when an ARCA event runs, the tracks pay ARCA to be there. So ARCA itself is not losing any money at all, because there's a sanctioning fee that they charge. So when they come to a track, they're paid to be there. Now, the purse, that's the difference between, you know, what the track and ARCA negotiates together is how much money they're going to get from ticket sales and stuff. And then ARCA itself goes out and sells title sponsorship to those events.
Well, Terry, we've already got a question on the line for you.
Okay.
We got Paul on the line. Paul, how you doing?
Hello, Mr. Earl. This is Mr. Paul.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm glad to be in Tennessee, but I miss Michigan.
Okay, well, that's good. You can always come back. We'll welcome you. We'll let you come back.
Okay. With the ARCA series and everything, with I know that right now they're doing all the development and everything to get new drivers and everything else. But how do you see with the Ty and Austin Dillon progressing from the ARCA series and everything else into the nationwide and also into NASCAR? Do you see any new up-and-coming drivers that like a Casey Elliott or something like that?
Well, Paul, that's a good question. Actually, Austin Dillon, that whole experiment was orchestrated by Richard Childress himself. Over the years, if you look, a number of different drivers have started in ARCA. It is a feeder series into the NASCAR ranks, and it was a very calculated decision by Richard Childress to let him get some seat time in an ARCA car. It carries a lot of the same weight that the NASCAR Nationwide Series does, and some of the same speed. So when you get used to that environment, it's good seat time for these drivers to learn. Now, of course, Austin has some pretty good equipment underneath them with a nice developmental project there. But you see other drivers coming up, that are going to be racing there. You mentioned Casey Elliott. He's one. You're going to see some other guys that are on the horizon. There's one guy who's racing out of Lansing, Michigan, that everybody's got their eye on right now. He started in sprint cars at Spartan Speedway. His name's Trevor Berry. And now that a couple other different series are looking at him, one being the Must-See Racing Extreme Sprint Cars to go in the 410 series, and there's right. Even people looking at him to run either in the CRA late models or possibly talk to him about a ride in ARCA, if not next year, then the following year. So these guys are all looked at as being guys that they're going to come up and run in the truck series or the nationwide series in the next year or two.
All right. I'm going to jump real quick from ARCA over to NASCAR real quick. Where do you see Matt Kenseth going?
Oh, he's definitely going to be going to Joe Gibbs Racing.
Okay.
That's probably the worst kept secret in NASCAR. As a matter of fact, earlier this week, Jack Roush, who, you know, and Matt Rudd currently runs for Roush Fenway. Jack was interviewed, and he's always been a big proponent of American racers, American cars, whether it be Ford or Chevrolet or Dodge, and he does not like Toyota being in the NASCAR series. And one of the comments he made, I thought was quite illustrative, was when he referred to Matt going over to the dark side.
Yeah, going to the dark side. But yeah. I didn't know if it was anything with speculation with Michael Andretti and Penske. So,
well, there's a lot of talk. The Penske crew is denying that. That camp is denying that Andretti's getting involved. But Michael is taking more and more of a ownership interest in, you know, he just ran that and was the host at the Milwaukee Mile for the IndyCars. But there's no secret that he sees that, you know, the IndyCar doesn't seem to be catching on like they wanted to, that the future may be in engine development and looking at NASCAR to someday get in there and maybe have some drivers in there. Obviously, well, like Danny Kirkpatrick to that, but I don't know if he really considers that a loss or not.
Well, it's definitely not a loss, but marketing-wise. But I do appreciate talking with you, and keep up the conversation.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Yep, thanks, Paul. Yep, bye-bye. Hey, Terry, I wanted to ask you, you know, you've got this, or at least you have this drug case now, impending Almendinger case. He says it's for, you know, basically for a dietary supplement, not one of the banned drugs that's out there. But how do you you know, you hear very few drug cases coming up in NASCAR. So how would this affect the NASCAR, basically?
Well, you know, it's you know, Almendinger's whole future rests in the B sample of a urine test that he took. He failed the first one, and the substance is being classified under the same category as a methamphetamine. As everyone knows, Jeremy Mayfield has been banned by NASCAR because he was taking meth, and then, of course, he denied it, but then life circumstances have shown that Jeremy Mayfield had a serious methamphetamine problem in his life, and that's why he's not racing, and his life's falling apart. But Almendinger, he's seriously contesting it. They're going to retest the B sample next week, and he's bringing in his own people and experts and stuff to be part of that testing, because he says he did not knowingly take anything, which is what a lot of the athletes say. I didn't knowingly take it. But Penske, you know, there may be something to it, because Penske is standing behind him in the sense that, yeah, we're going to let him. They're letting him say what he wants instead of just keeping his mouth shut if they had any doubt. For the sponsors, but they're letting him talk, and he's been very sincere. Hey, you know, I did it. I've got a good health program. I've got a good training program. I wouldn't do anything to upset that. You know, I've got a good ride. I'm working for a good team. I wouldn't do anything to jeopardize it. So he's out in front, you know, and if he's telling the truth, I hope it works out for him. If this sample comes back negative and it is methamphetamine, well, he's done forever, because nobody will sponsor him. And he'll be kicked out of NASCAR, even if he rehabilitates himself. They don't like that image, and they won't tolerate it. And unlike some sports, where you can come back after a 50-game suspension or you know, a multi-game suspension, in NASCAR, you're kicked out for drugs. Boy, it's tough to get back in the sport. That's pretty much a lifetime ban.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so
especially if you're not admitting that you got a problem.
Yes.
Like in his case, he's denying that he did anything, and if it turns out that he was, well, that's just. You know, NASCAR will come down really, really hard on them because they want to project that family image.
Okay. Hey, Terry, I know we've talked about Dan Kirkpatrick in the past and sometime, but let's just talk about the female drivers in general. Is the female drivers, are they getting more respect? And are more of them coming in overall to help NASCAR and some of the other races?
You know, I the last time we talked, Earl, I predicted, and I'm going to stick with my prediction. In the next 5 to 7 years, you're going to see a number of different female drivers make their way into the Nationwide, the truck. Some are already in the feeder system, but you're going to see a number of female drivers racing at the highest level. There's all around the Midwest, I see female drivers coming up through the ranks. Matter of fact, there's a nice local story out of Lansing, Michigan. A couple of gals that are 16 and 18 years old, respectively, they drive modifieds at Spartan and Owosso Speedway. The Girl Scouts of America has approached them. They're having an annual, I don't know what they call it, but down at MIS in the fall, and they're going to have people come in and talk about what career paths the things that young girls can do as they grow up. And one of the things for the very first time they're going to present to the Girl Scouts is that, hey, you can be an auto racing driver. You can get into racing. And, you know, and it's not just in circle track, Earl. There's some real top quality ladies driving in drag racing, NHRA, and there's some from Michigan that are coming up that are going to be running. They're running over at Martin 131 right now, looking to get into bigger money rides for national championships. So the future is bright for females. And I tell you what, in 7 years, you're going to look back at the past and say, oh, you know, it's a male-dominated sport. It may not be over. It may still have more males than females, but the women are coming, and, you know, you got to make room for them.
Yes, and when we look at the male side, there's, as we know, there's been an influx of pretty good drivers. Do you see that? Well, maybe that will lessen more male drivers coming into the sport near the top end, or do you see that still being the same, or even maybe getting larger?
But you know, I look at it this way, Earl. That when you get to the top level, it's all about money. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of drivers in this country today that could drive NASCAR, but they don't either, one, they don't have the personality to attract sponsors, or two, they don't have the sponsorship to begin with. Today, if you're a good driver, you almost have to be an A.J. Foyt or a Mario Andretti for someone just to say, all right, you've got great driving ability, we're going to put you into one of our cars. What they're looking for now is somebody who has driving ability and can bring money to the sport, either through their family or through a business that they have, or because they have such a charming personality that they, you know, they can go out and bring in money. Because I tell you what, you look at like Danica Patrick. Danica would not be racing nationwide or going cup racing next year if she did not have the money behind, with GoDaddy behind her. Because she has that, she's going to get a chance that other people might not have. But you're going to still see that. Now, I don't care if it's male or female down the road. The cost of racing is so expensive that if you don't have money behind you, or you don't have the personality to bring money to you, you're not going to be racing at the top level.
Yes, that's still the tough draw, isn't it? Getting those sponsorships, and now it's just even harder to get sponsorships these days. So you really do, like you say, you really do have to have something that will draw sponsors to you, don't you? To get a car.
Well, look at what's happening right here. Paul brought it up about Matt Kenseth going to Joe Gibbs Racing. Here's a car that doesn't have a full-time sponsorship this year. They've been hunting for sponsors. And for the longest time, Kenseth was leading the points. And the thing was, when they wanted to bring up Ricky Stenhouse Jr., they can't find a full-time sponsor for Matt Kenseth. How are they going to add another spot, you know, another team to Roush? He's basically going to fund it out of his own pocket to have Ricky Stenhouse in the stable, because there's a driver they recognize with talent. He's got a good personality that could be something in the cup, and they want to get him before he goes to someone else. So even at the highest levels of NASCAR right now, when you know, he's not the points leader, right? Yeah, but if when you look at Matt Kenseth leading the points and they can't find a sponsor for that car on a full-time basis, boy, you know, you can, that tells you how tight the economy is and what the world, the state of the world is right now.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to ask you, we haven't talked about this quite a bit. We've talked about it in the past, but how is the racing in Michigan this year? I know it's been down these past few years, but has racing bounced back at all? How's racing going on the tracks in Michigan?
You know, Earl, I'm going to say that it's on an uptick. There are more cars that are racing this year, and the crowds in general across the state and the Midwest are up. Now, last week, everybody took a big hit with that heat wave. The tracks had stayed open. A lot of tracks canceled because of the heat last weekend, but the tracks had stayed open. They noticed their car counts were down and the attendance was down, just because it's not fun to sit in the stands when it's 105 degrees and humid, and the track temperature was anywhere from 125 to 150 degrees. I was at Toledo Speedway last Friday night, and the ambient air temperature at race time was 101. And in the pits, in the shade, at 8 o'clock at night, it was 128 degrees. And I talked to other track owners who said that around the Midwest, some of the drag strips are reporting 156 degrees track temperatures. That's just too hot. Now, this weekend, you know, the temperatures are going to be down, even though they're going to be hotter during the day. But at 8 o'clock at night, it's going to be great for racing, you know, comfortable to sit out in the stands and enjoy some racing. And before the heat wave, you know, track attendance has been up and so is car count. Not a lot, but it's up, and that reverses the 3-year decline.
Yes, that's great because, yes, that auto racing is such an integral part of Michigan. I know people don't look at auto racing as far as the integral part of Michigan's economy, but it's been a big part of that for such a long time, hasn't it, Terry?
It sure has. And, you know, there's some great tracks around the state of Michigan. And, Earl, just in your coverage area, you know, like Spartan Speedway this weekend, they're racing tonight, and they're going to be racing on Sunday in the George and Charlie Ryan Memorial. So they got two races. Tri-City over in Auburn, Michigan, the Midland area. They're filling up the place and getting record car counts. Mount Pleasant Speedway tonight, they're going to have a memorial race to Jake Dickman, and they're going to give $3,000 away to the winner up there. So at these tracks, and, of course, Crystal just over there between just north of Ionia, they're filling the place every week. So, you know, and they all have long histories. They've been around for over 50 years. And the car manufacturers, they like to see what the local guys are doing. You know, it is a thriving business and the collateral thing, because basically what a race is, it's entertainment. And the event that's created, the restaurants, the convenience stores, the party stores, even some of the hotels, the gas station, by racing that all contributes to the economy. And it's vital that the sport keep going because, there's so many collateral businesses that receive benefits from Friday night, Saturday night racing.
Yeah, Terry, do the auto companies, car companies, do they ever send or get the parts and parts of cars in these small tracks? Can they be beneficiaries of some of the car companies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, on my Midwest Racing Scene Facebook page the other day, a driver from Southern Michigan posted a letter that he just received from the Ford Motor Company saying, hey, thank you for buying our parts. And, here's a check, as a token of our appreciation for you supporting us and our racing program. So when Ford Motor Company and General Motors, like Chevrolet, when they put their money into racing, everybody thinks of it just as NASCAR or something like that. No, they're building template engines for late model series. They're building parts for all these cars. Maybe not that, you know, and then, of course, you got the little bomber cars that are out there. So cars that are four cylinders or street stocks, a lot of that is original manufactured stuff by the automakers. In their aftermarket parts, yeah, they're selling a lot of stuff to these guys and girls on Friday and Saturday night racing. It's a good business for them, too.
Yeah. Hey, Terry, now, before I let you go, I know I've been to a couple of races where, it just seemed like people really like to watch cars crack up. Is that big everywhere, or is that just one of those things? Because I've seen a couple of those races, and people really like to watch the pileups.
Well, I tell you what, Earl, you know, it's just not because it's your birthday today and you like a big bang on your birthday. I know that. But people do like it. Matter of fact, one of the growing series in the state of Michigan and in the Midwest that seems to get becoming more popular are the figure eight races. And more tracks are building figure eight tracks within their ovals so that they can see people like that drama of cars crisscrossing in the middle and, you know, possibly crashing in the middle. Donald derbies are still popular where people go crashing into each other. But I got to tell you this, and I had never heard of this race until last night. I talked to Ron Flynn, the owner of Crystal Motor Speedway, and I believe it's not the 14th, but on Saturday the 21st, Crystal is running at what they call the Twin Flynns, named after Ron, where there's two different series of cars. One is going clockwise on the track, and the other is going counterclockwise. And I guess it's a lot of excitement, lots of crashes. And, of course, there's always the enduro races, which are popular. They'll put 300 cars on the track, and they go, and if you crash, you stay out there until the track's blocked so people can crash in you. So, yeah, that's very popular, and it fills the stands.
Okay. Hey, Terry, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know you're out there with my other buddy, Ken Sudol. Tried to find you guys, but as usual, I always get mixed up on directions.
Yeah, Ken was going to save you some of his famous brownies and beans. When you get out, bro, you know where to go find them out there by the at Go Green Glass. And but again, a very happy birthday to you, my friend, and I wish you all the best. And I know you got another year to go here before you wind it down. But You've been a great voice for Michigan State and for sports in general, and I always enjoy talking to you.
Hey, thanks a lot, Terry. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you, sir.
Yep, bye-bye. And that's Terry Fitzwater and talking sports with us, Mid-Michigan Magazine. It's 41 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Scientists say heat waves are 20 times more likely today than in the past, and the culprit? Climate change. I'm Neil Conan. Join Ira Flatto on Science Friday for a look at extreme weather in a warming world, plus keeping hydrated in the summer heat and how sound can change the taste of your food. That's on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Windy today, mostly sunny too, with a high of 90. Overnight, a low in the mid-60s, and it'll be partly cloudy tonight. For Saturday and Sunday, the high will be in the upper 80s tomorrow and low 90s on Sunday, partly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms each day. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock, right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, let's go back to the phones. We're open line for the rest of the day, so give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And hello, you're on the air.
Happy birthday, bro.
Hey, thank you.
Now, is this your actual birthday?
Yeah, it is.
Like an estimate.
Well, they're always estimates at this stage of life.
Well, I know back in your day, a lot of people weren't born in hospitals. They were kind of born at home, and then they, by the time they reported it, they forget, you know, the midwife would forget if she was there Thursday or Wednesday, so it'd be, yesterday. I was just checking. So happy birthday again, Earl.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, man, what do I need to do to disabuse you of the notion that Beeline went out and recruited specific guys because they fit his system, when the truth is Beeline went out and got who he could get? I mean, nobody offers Douglas scholarships to play basketball at any level except Michigan. Novak had a baseball scholarship, nothing else. Nobody else offered Morgan a scholarship. The only guy on his team from the upper class last year, or any class for that matter, that had another Big Ten school offer a scholarship was Burke, and that was Penn State. He's got some top 100 guys coming in now because all of a sudden they see Michigan as perhaps being more attractive. I don't think it's a matter of system, Earl. I think the guy gets who he can get. And, you know, things are looking better now. He's getting better recruits. You know, I think it had a lot more to do with the success in the court than it did in picking guys out of a crowd based on how they fit in this system.
You're right. That has a lot to do with it, for sure. But, I just look at Beeline's history. Overall, you go back 15 and 20 years, he's always looked at guys who he believes that they can fit in their system, whether they're a big-name recruit or not. You've got to play the way he wants you to play, and that's how he's done it all these years. And got to admit, he's been pretty successful at it.
Yeah, but that's true with any coach, and he's never been at a school where he could get multiple top 100 players before until now. So I think it's new territory. It's kind of exciting, and we'll see how it turns out. He's got some very good talent coming in.
Yes, he does.
Years, so
yes, he does.
Fun.
Yeah, it's
Earl,
very good for Michigan.
Mm-hmm. I'm a jock your memory, and I'm positive. I remember discussing this on your show back in the '80s. There was a Penn State ex-Penn State player who wrote a book about his experience playing for Joe Fye, and this book came out in the mid to late 80s. And he was talking about how the Paterno's coaching staff was exceedingly demanding, made players play hurt, had a win-at-all-cost attitude, and physically and verbally abused their players. And it didn't get a lot of traction because I don't think the media back then was as as comprehensive as it is now, certainly not as hungry for controversy as it is now. But I remember reading that book, and it really cast a bad light on Turtle. And now in in reading the Freewood report, I'm sure you've read that by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, read some of it.
It looks to me that, and I guess this is everyone's conclusion, at least everyone I've read, that Paterno's first instinct was to protect his program and to protect his image and be able to maintain his position so he could go after that all-time winning record as a football coach. And he had very little, if any, concern about what was going on with the children who were being abused by Sandusky. If that is the case, Earl, I think we may have seen an indication back in the 80s when that guy wrote that book. And again, I'm sure we discussed that on your show back at the time, Tim Adams and you.
Yeah, I think we
callers
did.
Talked mm-hmm. about that. And it was kind of surprising because even then, that was before Penn State was the Big Ten. But even then, Paterno had such a sterling reputation. And so if you get a minute, man, I'm going to do it myself, but if you get a minute, see if you can research it and find out who that book was written by and maybe give it a quick glance and see if there's anything in that book that's kind of a predictor of what happened later on.
Yes, because, you know, cause when I look at it now with all the things that we've seen about Paterno and now how is his reputation has been, of course, it's going to change. It's been damaged forever. I look back at that and say, you know, you should never put a coach on such a high level that Paterno was on. I mean, you know, people would thought he could do no wrong, and that was the wrong attitude to take.
And it got to the point where he was the authority
yes.
at Penn State. I think it was 2006 that the president of the university tried to fire him. Mr. Turner was like, you ain't firing me. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, can you think of anyone at any level with that kind of juice, that kind of leverage? They can tell their boss to go fly a kite. I'm not leaving.
You know, I've never when I heard that back then, I was surprised. I mean, yeah, I've never heard that. And you know, maybe we can get back to that where you know, where guys, hey, you got to be held accountable at all times. No matter what you've done for how many years, you still got to be held accountable. You know, if you have a 2 or 3 bad years or 4 bad years, if they want to get rid of you, they should be able to get rid of you. But you're right. With him, they just couldn't get rid of him.
No, he had all the power, he had all the clout, and apparently he was taking advantage of that, and he wasn't this selfless, expansive man that we all thought he was. He was looking out for number one the whole time, and even if that came at the expense of children being abused, he was going to protect his program and his legacy. And you know, things come out in the wash, and in the end, he's probably going to be one of the most tarnished football coaches that we could ever imagine. Penn State has gone from a pristine program to probably the most scandalous football program in history. I mean, it makes SMU and any of the other scandals you could think of look like child's play compared to what happened. And that's a bad choice of words. I apologize. But it pales in comparison now after what happened at Penn State. Anything you can think of, in my opinion.
Oh yes, it does. There's no doubt about that. Do you think that you know, we'll see maybe one? Do you think the NC2A? That's going to ask. Do you think the NC2A will do anything to them? Because technically, it wasn't really an NC2A violation. I've heard a few people think that maybe they might go after them, but I don't know. Do you think the NC2A will ever do anything to Penn State?
I don't see how they can, Earl. I don't know how you can create a rule and then retroactively apply it. I don't know that there were any explicit rules about anything that went on with this Penn State situation. And you know, really, Earl, I don't think that there needs to be. I think the justice system and the civil courts are going to extract punishment sufficient to teach anyone a lesson about this thing. I think that the president and the AD are going to not only pay a heavy price in terms of civil lawsuits, they're going to do jail time. And you don't go from the highest level of society to prison and not have that ruin your life. You know, the Paterno family has been devastated by this. Their reputation, their family has forever been damaged. And the university has taken a huge PR hit. So I don't know that the NCAA can do anything, Earl, but at the same time, I don't know that they need to do anything. I think there's been enough, there's going to be enough punishment levied that, you know, it's going to be sufficient.
Yeah, because I would say if you do something now, it's like just like piling on. I mean, it's time exactly. for, you know, people let it go and let their get their program and let them go on and play their games and everything. Yeah, sooner or later, you have to let it go. And, you know, right now, it seems like a lot of people just want to pile on.
Yeah, and, you know, none of the athletes were complicit.
Right.
You know, a lot of times you have a NCAA violation, you know, and a lot of times I think they're not fair. If, you know, if an athlete gets some money under the table, in my opinion, he ought to be getting money under the table. But even then, in most of those situations, the athlete was complicit in whatever the rule violation was. But in this case, none of these guys had anything to do with it. I doubt any of them had an inkling that any of this stuff was going on. So I don't think it would be fair to punish the football players and the new staff for something that the old staff did, which had nothing, again, to do with the athletes. It just had to do with a sick, perverted guy and his buddies who wanted to protect him because they wanted to, A, look out for him, and B, look out for themselves. So I don't think it'd be fair for the NCAA to do anything at this point.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, I'm looking forward to watching the fight tonight because I get to watch an old guy like you fight tonight. Going to see Glenn Johnson over on ESPN.
And, you know, and Glenn Johnson can still go, too.
Yes, he can.
Like just like me. So, yeah, I'll be watching too. All right, Earl.
Okay. Hey, good talking with you, Dennis.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. And that's our good friend Dennis talking sports with us. We got Mark on the line. Mark, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Hey, how you? I'm hanging. How you doing, brother?
I'm less old than Dennis. he throwed him in his sleep. That's when he throwed him. Hey, man, NCAA is look, they can't get involved. Even if they want to get involved, even if they've got the authority to get involved, if they get involved in this situation, then you're going to have a calling for them to get involved in every other situation that's involved that involves the university, even though it does not relate to competition.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So yep. we got a coach that's got a criminal problem, a drinking problem. We got players who are running amok with the law. It's an administrative issue more than anything
yeah.
else. I don't know if the Big Ten presidents have some kind of body, authoritative body that would perhaps step in this kind of situation and sanction Penn State. But you can't have the NCAA getting involved in matters that don't have something to do with competition because you just don't want them doing that kind of stuff. You think that they're arbitrary insofar as competitive matters go. Well, just imagine they open up this can of worms and decide to somehow sanction Penn State because of the profile that was given to this thing and the precedent that it would create if they decided to do so. So, no, I don't see them getting involved for that reason.
Yeah.
They don't want to be. They got enough to handle when it comes to competition and athletics. They don't want to be generally influencing or acting as the ultimate authority when it comes to administrative matters and institutions. So that's why they won't. Not because I don't think it's necessarily because the criminal justice system is going to exact a certain amount or a sufficient amount of retribution, because that might even fall off short. There will be the civil suits, obviously, and looks like they're well postured civilly to recover something. But no, man, the NCAA just they can't do it. They don't have the ability. They don't have the desire. They don't have the ability to tell a school like this what they should be doing when it comes to coaching, investigation, et cetera, matters. So I know a lot of folks are clamoring because they're just not satisfied. Better yet, they're clamoring because they're really, really upset about what happened. But they got to understand UCAA is limited what they can do.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I must admit, I've just been basically disappointed somewhat, you know, how the media has handled it. Because, as you know, Joe Paterno was such an icon, was so strong of a personality. No one really looked into what was going on in the program for years. I mean, for years. I mean, people just assumed that what the PR people said, that Joe Paterno was a good coach and ran a good program, and that was it. People really didn't look at the whole program. I mean, if they had looked at it, you know, people, for the most part, the media tries to do a good job and look at it. But, you know, Paterno was put up on such a pedestal, you know, no one ever looked at it.
Well, Earl, I can't even say the media typically does a good job, because you've just described the hypocrisy of the whole situation. They want to damn Paterno for failing to know enough, for failing to take sufficient action. Same thing with the board of trustees, but they're sitting around on the same kind of information. You can't tell me that it wasn't until fall of last year that they had an idea of something going on with Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah.
And they didn't take action against Joe Paterno until it became public, and they were forced into doing something. So if their problem with Joe Paterno was the fact that he didn't show enough of initiative when it came to Sandusky, then Jerry Sandusky, then they fall in the same camp. And if the media wants to sit around and talk and criticize Joe for the same thing, they were sitting right there, and we get these stories in this regard until there was a grand jury investigation just a couple of years ago. So I can't say the media does a good job in much of anything except making news. And they do a wonderful job doing that right now, because now everybody's got an opinion on Joe Paterno, whereas in Penn State, whereas a couple of months ago, they would definitely all get out. So, hey, I got somewhat disagree with some of your brethren. Not that everybody rolls the same way, but you got folks that are making a living right now by virtue of them having a platform to get up there and just be hypocrites.
Yeah, that's true. I got to agree with you. There are a lot of I'm just seeing more and more hypocrites these days.
and they don't call. And as you know, they don't really call each other out.
Right.
So it's okay. You hear folks talk about, you have folks on your show, and other folks have folks on their shows. And I haven't asked you this question, but I know you got to feel a little bit constrained when it comes to asking tough questions, because you don't want to alienate them, and you want them to continue to come on your show, but you don't necessarily want to call them out. I'm talking about you generally, because hey, they might be your buddy, but more importantly, you know they got a platform too. So they may get off your show, and you put them in a bad position. They turn around on their show, and they're beating you up. You don't want necessarily mess with folks that, what they say, buy ink by the gallon, right?
Yeah.
Or got verbiage by the ton.
Yeah.
So anyway, man, it's an interesting discussion, man, and I got to admit to you, man, I wanted to call in because you were talking about Michigan basketball earlier, but I couldn't stand being on the same line with Mark Snyder. I'm sure you understand.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mark. Okay. Yeah, bye-bye. That's another one of our good callers. Mark talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. It's been a great pleasure talking with each and every one of you today. Alex, we've had a lot of good guests today. The last couple of days, we've had a lot of good callers.
Oh, absolutely. And not besides just the callers, the topics, Earl. I mean, we've talked about college football programs and beer and wine at stadiums. You've had some great topics.
Yeah, we had some good topics today, the last couple of days. Yeah, that was nice. And it'll be interesting to see how all this alcohol breaks out when they start serving it, the beer and the wine in Minnesota. I'm going to be following that just to see how it goes, and if the other schools will pick up on that. And next year might even be more schools serving alcohol and selling alcohol. Well, hey, we want to thank everybody for calling, and thanks for everyone for listening today. Invite you to come back and join us on Monday. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. We want you to come back and join us on Monday. Talk more sports with us right here on Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you Monday right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.